Blog Talk Radio.
Touchdown!
Football. Catch my feet. The sport of
kings. I'm gonna tell you what. You know what? It's funny, man. The thing is true.
Welcome to a special edition of The Balance Online with your host, Tom Marquis, for Super Bowl 49. It's Sunday, February 1st, 2015. The Seattle Seahawks take on the New England Patriots. Tom will break down everything that's going on with the game. Now sit back, enjoy yourself, and have a cold one while you enjoy The Balance Online special Super Bowl 49 coverage.
What's the score? So you like football, huh?
All right, shut up!
Nation, you have stumbled across it. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Yeah, we got things started a little bit late today. Unfortunately, we had a what could we call it? A catastrophic failure at the studio here, and unable to connect with our facilitator, which, by the way, brings us nationwide to you. So we are here. We are here and we are alive. I want to find out if somebody else is alive. Mr. Steve Wilson, are you there?
I am here this morning. How are you doing?
Oh, my gosh. You know, everything was fine. I got into the studio to do the show. Everything was good. And then there was nothing. There was catastrophic failure. But the great thing about it is, you know, I was able to get on the phone to our facilitator, their helpline. They walked me through some stuff, and we just got started late. So, you know, hey, but the good thing about it is I spared everyone from my 30-minute opening monologue rant. Does that sound good?
In the IT world, we call it IT gremlins.
IT gremlins, that's right, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, this is Tom Marquis, El Presidente, and this is The Balance, and also welcome to our fans over at Yahoo Sports, who are listening to us now, at least we hope, and our encore episode right now on Yahoo Sports Indiana, between 1 and 3, and it is race weekend here in Indianapolis. And not to take away from NASCAR, Steve is going to be talking with us. Steve Wilson from Speedway Digest is going to be talking with us. Some action in the Truck Series out in Kansas yesterday. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about NASCAR. Obviously, the big boys, I think anyway, are off this weekend because it's Mother's Day. But it is race weekend here in Indianapolis. It's not the Indianapolis 500, but it is the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis, and I'm going to tell you what, it is fantastic. I've been out there most of the week and the weekend for sure, and it has been a great time. And we're going to break that down with Phil B. Wilson from the Scout, going to be joining us and talking with us about the Angie's List Grand Prix. And then, of course, as you know, Deflategate has been deflated, or inflated maybe. The good thing about it is we hear rumors that Tom Brady's going to be suspended and possibly fined a chunk of money. So we're going to be talking with Mo from the BS Big Mo Sports Show on Yahoo Sports, talking about Deflategate and what we got to do. So we got a lot to talk about. So really all we meant, all if you missed anything at all, was just my opening monologue. But joining us now is Mr. Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest. Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm not doing bad at all. It's raining a little bit here in Virginia, and I hear out in Kansas it's going to be a little touch and go all day long until we get up until late hours. So hopefully we'll get a race in later on tonight, but and hopefully all those rain clouds will get out of the way, that's for sure.
Well, I hope so, too. We've got some scattered showers headed this way, too. The great thing about the and we'll go to NASCAR, but the great thing about IndyCar as far as the road courses go, they'll run in the rain. And actually, it's kind of cool sometimes to watch them run in the rain. They got the big rooster tails coming up. Now on the oval, they won't run in the rain, but in the road courses, they'll run in the rain unless there's lightning or something in the area. So either which way, I think we're going to have us a race here in Indianapolis. And if you've never been to Indianapolis for a race of any kind, it's the only place in the world where you can go and watch a road course race and an oval race, Steve, all in the same month. Indianapolis Motor Speedway today is a fantastic place to be. But as you said, Kansas, a lot of action yesterday going on in the Camping World Truck Series. Yesterday, or last night, I should say, and up to the hours of the night, and I know I listened to that part of that, but because I had to be in here early this morning, and I thought, well, everything's going to go off without a hitch this morning, I would rely on you to bring us up to speed on the Camping World Truck Series. So talk with us. We'll start there, then we'll go over to the Xfinity Series, and, of course, the NASCAR race.
Ah, well, you know, what can you say? Kansas out there, they did a pretty good job out there last night. Only three cautions out there throughout the event. Matt Crafton and the eventual winner out there, which, you know, the funny thing was is Matt Crafton coming out at the end there, he was running fourth with two laps to go. Eric Jones led 151 laps out there throughout the race event, just totally dominated. At some points, he was running 10, 12 seconds ahead of second place out there, Ryan Nimitz. Unfortunately, coming there two laps to go, Eric Jones runs out of fuel. Behind him was Tyler Reddick. He was he runs out of fuel. Did about a half a lap later after that, coming to the white flag. Daniel Suarez runs out of fuel. Puts Matt Crafton right there in that position where he was at that point, he was running about 14 seconds behind the leader. When three lead trucks out there ran out of fuel, giving him the race win out there. I mean, we haven't seen that in a while. You know, I know a lot of fans out there will say, well, this is a fuel mileage race, and I'm tired of seeing fuel mileage races. But it really wasn't a fuel mileage race out there. It's just that these teams out there, they didn't run their calculations right, and, well, somebody out there took advantage of somebody else's bad luck, and Matt Crafton, your eventual winner out there, second time that he's won out there.
Well, absolutely. And talk about us about Kansas. You know, we had Richmond and then we had Talladega and going into the NASCAR race season, I should say. And then we go out to Kansas and it's kind of like, well, it's not the same. We're used to a lot of action and stuff. And Kansas is a track that's a good track. A lot of racers like the Kansas track, but we don't hear about it as fans as our Talladega and as our Richmond and so forth and as our Texas and other courses. But what makes Kansas a good course, and why Kansas?
Well, I mean, Kansas, a lot of ways, is a very fast track out there. It's one of the fastest that we go on these mile-and-a-half ovals out there. A couple of years ago, NASCAR and ISC that owns the track went and said, okay, well, we got to do something about the racing out here because it was very stagnant racing. And they went in there, they changed to a variable banking in the turns. The back straightaway is only about 7 degrees on the back straight. Same way with the front straight. So it's a variable degree track, but it allows for very, very fast racing out there. Kansas is a track where when, you know, long before the days of sprint ever coming into the series, NASCAR was looking for an entry into the Midwest. They had nothing really out there. A couple road courses, Ohio, things like that, but Road America. But they didn't really have a sprint cup track out there, and it's something that they wanted to enter into that market. So Kansas was the obvious, facility. There's plenty of land out there. And just a few years down the road, here comes Sprint into the fold. And, you know, they're based in Overland Park, not too far away from the track. So it was an obvious giving them a second date out there, along with the casino that they did build out there. So it's just one of those things that Kansas is a very fast track. I know there's a lot of drivers now from the Midwest. You got Jamie McMurray, Clint Bowyer, Carl Edwards that all pretty much call this track a home track for them because they're out that way. And it's good because we're seeing a lot of drivers come from the Midwest these days and out in California where we need to change this up. And I know just last week, Kevin Harvick said, hey, you know, we've got a very stagnant schedule out here. And Kansas is one of those, like, it's a fast track. And a lot of people like it. I mean, when you've got guys out there like, sorry about that. You got Joey Logano out there, and you got Case Kane out there that are pushing 191, 192 miles an hour qualifying out there for the pole. It makes for a better race out there, even though we may not have seen it last night with Eric Jones being able to run away from the field. But today is a little bit different when we get into the Sprint Cup Series race later on tonight, where we're seeing a closer pack out there. Yes, it'll be strung around a little bit, but we're going to see a little bit better racing out there.
Well, absolutely. Now, and just help us understand what race is happening tonight in Kansas. Obviously, we've got the SpongeBob SquarePants 400. Now, SpongeBob SquarePants 400. Now, talk with me a little bit about, or maybe it's just about money. Maybe that's all it is. Maybe we're trying to promote SpongeBob. But how did SpongeBob SquarePants become the title sponsor for the race out in Kansas today?
Well, actually, this sponsorship goes back a fair few years, even all the way back to Charlotte, where we had Jimmy Johnson running a SpongeBob car many years ago. Over the years, there's been a variation of the sponsorship. And for people that don't have kids, need to realize that the SpongeBob SquarePants 400 that we're running tonight is a marketing effort that Viacom and Nickelodeon are putting on because of the second movie that is about to come out on Blu-ray and DVD here very shortly. So they've created this marketing campaign, obviously as you would in the movie industry to promote your videos that are coming out. But, you know, NASCAR on the other side, this is, no matter who you are, this is a great marketing effort from them and their staff out there that they're looking to bring the next generation of fans into the sport. And how better to do it than to put a name on a race of something that kids watch on TV every day? It's going to promote the sport. It's going to draw the fans in. I mean, this is a huge marketing effort. I mean, you got to look at it from that aspect. And NASCAR, Viacom, Nickelodeon, all the people that have put this together have done this for a reason. And a lot of it is that we're trying to draw a new generation of fans into the sport. And we've got to continue these marketing efforts most definitely with things of this nature, with SpongeBob SquarePants 400, obviously, tonight. But there's other marketing efforts, and that's really what a lot of it comes down to. And, you know, it's marketing genius in my book.
Well, I tell you what, that's all NASCAR. I mean, outside of the race cars, obviously, and the actual racing, but that's what's made NASCAR NASCAR in the fact that they've been able to take marketing and really take that to the next level. And my, you know, I have a degree in marketing, so I understand that. But it's just intriguing to me when we see interesting races with the title sponsor of SpongeBob SquarePants 400. Now, I'm going to refer to an article that you wrote on your page, or somebody wrote on your page anyway, that talks about Jeff Gordon likes this 1.5 oval track located on the far west side of Kansas City. And Gordon's won there as well. Jeff Gordon, we're talking about his farewell tour, if you will, throughout the NASCAR season this year as he says goodbye to racing as a driver anyway. Obviously not going to say goodbye to racing. Be interesting to see where he ends up at. But you say, or your article says, that Jeff Gordon likes this track. And so Jeff Gordon liking this track and having a great history at Kansas, on this oval track, does Jeff Gordon get his first win of the farewell season?
I don't know. Jeff Gordon has not really paced the field very well this weekend. I mean, he's going to start out 11th, which really isn't that bad of a starting position at all. But he's just not shown the speed out there like some of the other guys have. I mean, Joey Logano has obviously shown a ton of speed out there, hitting the fall at 192 miles an hour. Clint Bowyer, again, he's another guy that has pace practice. Your usual suspect of Kevin Harvick, yet again, out there pacing one of the practices. But, you know, Jeff Gordon, he's had a lot of success out there in the mile-and-a-half racetrack. There's only two tracks out there that I know of that he has not won at. One of them is a mile-and-a-half, and that's Kentucky. So he's won at Kansas before. He's got an opportunity to do so today. I think he's going to have to get by some very, very strong cars out there in order to claim that win. I think he's got a much better shot coming up throughout the summer season, most definitely. And if I had to put my prediction behind it, I think he'll win at the Brickyard again this year, if you ask my opinion, and probably get his first win and punch his ticket into the chase.
Well, how awesome would that be, talking about the Brickyard, and obviously it's race weekend here in Indianapolis for the IndyCar and the Angie's List Grand Prix of the second race that we've had there. But how awesome would that be for Jeff Gordon, who won the inaugural Brickyard race, the Brickyard 400 race, when it started, he won the first one, to win his last race at the Brickyard. Now, I know there's talk about him coming back in 2016 to race another race, but how spectacular would that be for Hendrick Motorsports and Jeff Gordon to win at Indianapolis on Brickyard?
Well, he is defending champion. He won there in 2014. So he's
right,
got a lot
right,
on the line,
right.
not only defending that win from last year, but being his last season out there. It's by all means a home game for him in front of his home crowd. So this is going to be obviously huge for him to do something like that and win out there. He can get around that track like nobody else probably in the field right now, with the exception there's probably Tony Stewart out there. I can't count him out either, but Jeff Gordon is going to be the guy that you're going to have to beat at the Brickyard, that's for sure, and it's going to be a special thing for him.
Right, and we've got a few races to go yet before we get to late July, and we see what happens. You know, and here's the thing, you watch NASCAR, you hear about NASCAR and the speeds that they hit, and, you know, obviously not as fast as IndyCar goes, but you hit some pretty serious speeds. But somehow, some way, Clint Bowyer ends up getting a speeding ticket, and I know you wrote about that. So tell us how that came about in Kansas.
Oh, Clint Bowyer. Well, I tell you, Clint is a funny guy. We had the opportunity to talk to him when I was at Richmond just a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, what can I say about him? He is wide open, just wide open. Everything he does is wide open. And this just goes to show that, you know, getting his speeding ticket, I think it was something about 90-some-odd miles per hour, 95 or so, I think I believe it was. Well, I don't know what to say about that, but Clint Boyer is just wide open. That's all I've got to say.
Well, and certainly, I know you guys posted an article about that on your website a few hours ago. I guess it's probably been yesterday now. But let's talk a little bit. We talk about the Kurt Busch Hour often when you come on here. We talk about Kurt Busch. But let's talk about Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch, the brother of Kurt Busch, is in his own right becoming a very, very well-known driver. And a lot of people think, well, I don't like the Busch brothers, period. But Kyle Busch is really determined that he's in it to win it. So talk with us about, obviously, his recovery and where he's at and where do we expect him to end up at the end of this year?
Well, Kyle Busch has over 100 wins in NASCAR National Series events, and that includes the Camping World Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Sprint Cup Series. He's one of those guys that I always consistently say that he can drive anything with four wheels and a steering wheel, and even some things without, because he's a guy that is, as you just said, in it to win it. He will wreck a truck, he'll wreck somebody else, he doesn't care. He's in it to win that, no matter where he's got to go to do it. Well, Kyle Busch is, I know a lot of people in the years have said that, well, he's got an attitude, he's stuck up, he's this, he's that. But there's no denying that this kid, and by all means, he's still a kid because he's still in his 20s compared to some of these old guys out there. But he can drive anything out there. There's nothing out there that I don't think that he can't drive and win in. He knows he's good at what he does, and he's got a lot of fans out there. Unfortunately, he had the incident there at Texas early on this. I'm sorry, at Daytona early on this year in the Xfinity race, coming out to close that event out. By all means, he probably would have won that if that incident would have happened. Well, Kyle just here recently has tested a late model a couple of times, and I believe next week he's going to make another test in a late model that he owns. And this is more to get acclimated back to see where he is in his progression on getting back into that race car. He did come out and say that he is not going to be in a car anytime soon, but when he does, it will be back in the number 18. I think that he's going to probably be more or less like Tony Stewart when he comes back, limiting what he does in the other series out there because he needs to focus on winning, and he still has yet to get a Sprint Cup championship out there, even with all the wins, all the things that he's done in that series. He still has yet to get a championship out of it, and I think a lot of it he's going to have to reevaluate exactly where he wants to be, where he wants to put his focus at. He's got a truck team out there, well, actually multiple truck teams that he has to worry about week in and week out. Granted that Joe Gibbs Racing does help support that operation with operational items such as the chassis and the engines and things like that. But he's spreading himself so far around between running all these events. He's got multiple truck teams, and then he's got to be out there in a sprint car every single weekend. So where he ends up later on in the season, I would say that we're still probably in the summer months, late summer months, before we're going to see him back. He's got no opportunity this year to win a Sprint Cup championship, which, Eric Jones, he's going to be in the number 18 for the foreseeable future, and I think that we'll probably see him do some good things in Kyle Busch's car. But Kyle is going to have to be able to come back later on this year and kind of reevaluate his priorities and where he wants to be going into 2016, obviously.
Well, absolutely. And we talk about Kyle and we talk about Kurt, obviously fantastic win that he's doing. But, we look at the two brothers and their attitudes on the track and their attitudes with the media and their attitudes with the fans. And it's a love-hate relationship with the fans. You either love them or you hate them. But the thing about it is I think they come about it, pretty naturally. Obviously, their grandfather, Al, and Tom, their father, raced the dirt tracks. As well, we've heard the stories, whether they be urban legend or not, their grandfather Al was quite the character at the dirt tracks, even racing as a hobby. From the aspect that I've heard stories about him punching a dude, hitting a dude with a wrench, all during the race. I heard a story one time where his father Tom actually said. And gave the finger and to the fans and mooned them. I mean, there's all kinds of stories that they grew up seeing, so maybe they come about it naturally.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people, we've heard a lot of the urban legends. Truthfully, I don't know if any of those are true. I've heard some of the same things my own self. But, this is the kind of stuff that goes on in most, and I'm not saying all, but I'm saying most, short tracks out there. I mean, you've got tracks out there that are known for being just wild and crazy on the weekends that all kinds of things go down. People taking jack handles, wrenches, whatever it is. And, I mean, people get mad out there, and I mean, rightfully so. A lot of these guys and girls that are out there racing on Fridays and Saturday nights, when somebody puts them into the wall, it's not some big name sponsor that's going to come out there and fix their car for them. No, they've got to dig into their own bank accounts and they got to fix this. So, rightfully, I mean, you get a lot of that attitude out there. But then you take a look at Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart came from the open wheel dirt tracks. He's been in IndyCar. He's worked his way into NASCAR. But those guys have a mentality in the open wheel series that it's unlike a stock car race. You're now talking apples and oranges. And you know how fiery and tempered he can be from time to time, but then on the other spectrum of it all, he can be just as even-keeled as anybody else out there. I think a lot of it just really just comes down to, the personal temperament, but then you see this on a week in and week out, and you kind of develop that. And some places... Some people, this is their kind of like, this is their gimmick. You understand, kind of like, you got to have a gimmick sometimes to keep going. And I think some of this is, a lot of it, in some of these series, it is a gimmick for these drivers just to say, okay, well, I'm a bad boy. I'm going to pick up a wrench and I'm going to go after somebody because I need somebody out there cheering for me and saying, kind of thing.
Right, absolutely. We're talking with Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest. And, I didn't mean to get on a tangent there, but I think you're right. There's like Tony Stewart, for example. We'll use him as an example. He's not as bad of a guy as the media portrayed him to be. And I think we saw that when the issue happened up in New York and how sensitive he was to that matter. I think sometimes NASCAR, by definition, creates the bad boy image. But interesting to see how that plays out there with Kyle coming back from his recovery. I kind of got off in left field there, man. I took a left turn. I don't know where that came from, but it's good to talk about stuff like that. But I tell you what, coming up next week, we talk about the month of May here in Indianapolis, the month of May in Charlotte. It's pretty freaking cool if you're a NASCAR fan. Obviously, looking forward to Charlotte on Friday. And then again on Saturday, two races back-to-back. And obviously, Charlotte is the hub of NASCAR as Indianapolis is to IndyCar. So let's look forward to that race. That's like winning a Daytona 500. That's like winning, the championship, if you will, if you go to Charlotte and you win. How important is this race to the drivers, to the teams, and it's all in for everybody on these two Charlotte races?
Oh, it's nothing but bragging rights. Your family, your friends are there, your team. One of the few events out of the entire year that the entire shop can come to the racetrack and see what you do, with their race cars. So this is huge for them. Hey, we're going to put the trucks on the track next Friday night. We're going to follow that up with the sprint showdown, which is going to lock the final drivers into the all-star race next Saturday night. And we're going to award somebody $1 million out there just for being able to win that race out there, $1 million. No points,
$1 million.
Yes. Yeah. Checkers or wreckers, as they like to say.
I tell you, I used to have that sound bite from Austin Powers, $1 million. Well, Steve Wilson, we appreciate you joining us and taking some time to talk some NASCAR with us. Coming up here in just a moment, we're going to have Phil B. Wilson going to be breaking down the big IndyCar race here in Indianapolis today. So what do you guys got going on? What are you working on? And how can people follow your work, your masterpieces, and so forth?
Well, we've got a couple of people out there at Kansas Speedway that are going to cover the event tonight for everybody. You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter and SpeedwayDigest.com. We post all of our articles out there at least a couple times a day. Lots of good stuff out there from fantasy racing to opinions to we even started a couple new things out there this year that we're trying to get working on. But check us out. Let us know what you think. Ask us questions, and we'll respond the best we can.
Well, absolutely. I know I follow you quite extensively, and obviously, as I mentioned before, you guys are on our RSS feed, so just go to thebalanceonline.com, and it's to the right there, Speedway Digest. And anytime they post an article, it goes right up on our page as well. So, Steve, keep up the good work, man, and we'll talk again in not next week, but the following week.
All right, guys, you take it easy. Have fun.
Thank you. Steve Wilson. Of Speedway Digest, talking about some NASCAR action. I got on that tangent with Kyle and Kurt Busch, but sometimes it happens in the course of live radio, right? Well, my name is Mark Wassell, Presidente. We'll be back right here in just a moment to break down the Grand Prix, the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis today. Of course, it's the first race of two for IndyCar, and all gearing up and for the grand finale of the Indianapolis 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. You don't want to miss what's coming up right here on the Balance Radio Network.
I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, National Service Officers.
We've got an entire generation of men and women who have seen war. They're going to need voices. They're going to need advocates.
Paralyzed Veterans of America is here to help.
We're going to make sure that the Veterans Affairs gives them everything that they're entitled to.
Get all the health care they need.
Making a person's house adaptable for them to go back home and live.
Education benefits.
And we also focus on getting them a job.
And if something happens to the veteran, then, you know, we're the spouse's advocate.
We help our veterans for free.
The way that Paralyzed Veterans of America does that is through their national service officers that are located throughout the United States.
Our work is important because people depend on us.
And they know when they come to Paralyzed Veterans of America, they're going to get the right answer. And they know that we are there for them 24/7. Because we are.
Changing lives, building futures. That's Paralyzed Veterans of America. To learn more, visit PVA.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Miners trust the makers of Peak Antifreeze to protect their 600-ton ore haulers from extreme conditions. You can trust Peak Antifreeze's unique formula to help protect your engine from costly repairs. Peak Antifreeze. Protect your ride, no matter what you drive.
Peak Antifreeze. When you peak, you win.
Whoa!
welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest took some time to join us and talk with us about NASCAR. Obviously, the SpongeBob SquarePants 400 out in Kansas. SpongeBob SquarePants, who would have ever thunked that would have been a title sponsor, if you will, for the a NASCAR race, right? Well, it is race weekend here in Indianapolis. We're standing by for Phil B. Wilson to give us a call. We're going to talk some NASCAR. I want to get into some IndyCar talk with you. Yeah, obviously, it's the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. If you've never been to the Indianapolis, I said this earlier, if you've never been to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, well, what are you waiting for, first of all? And second of all, it is the place to be in the month of May. And as you know, last year they began something new, if you will, and that is a race, the beginning of the month, whatever, where we're at now, which is the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, which is now the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. And, you know, various different races going on. You got the Mazda GP, you've got the Pro Mazda races, the Indy Lights races, which we had a good race out there yesterday afternoon with Indy Lights races as well. And a lot of drivers that we know came out of that Indy Lights course and that Indy Lights upbringing, if you will. So, you know, and here's the other thing, why we're standing by here and we're talking about IndyCar at the IMS, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. If you live here in Indianapolis, you probably already know this, but there's something new going on as far as traffic goes. We've got the roundabout there at 16th and Georgetown, right smack dab, by the way, pretty much in front of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I think that'll alleviate some traffic. I think so. I hope so. And also, it allows some easy access into downtown Speedway. And if you get a chance to go down Main Street in Speedway, it's just, you know, the Delora plants there. You've got Sarah Fisher, Ed Carpenter, the CFH Racing is there. Just go there, check out. And, of course, Sarah Fisher is building a new indoor go-kart race track there. So I'll tell you what, if you've not been to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, get on out here and check it out. I tell you what. And then the huge new video boards, the high-def video boards, the new scoring pylon that they put in last year. You see, it really just keeps getting better and better for the fan and the fan experience. And we are still standing by here for Phil B. Wilson. Well, hopefully we'll get him connected here. I know he's probably out of the track right now. There's probably a lot going on. So we'll get to him and you know, what's so forth. Obviously, the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis out of Indianapolis Motor Speedway is a road course race. And that's another really cool thing that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is able to do. They're able to configure a road course race. You know, a lot of tracks across the nation, it's either a road course or it's an oval. Well, not here in Indianapolis. It is both an oval and a road course. Because after today's race, the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis, which, by the way, you can watch on national television on ABC. I'm sorry, I almost said ESPN, but same company on ABC. And just a fantastic race. You're gonna have a fun time watching it. And if you're gonna be there, like myself, well, you need to be there because I'm gonna tell you what, it is fantastic. And so what happened? Will Power yesterday got the fastest speed and put him in the P1 spot as well. And so certainly go to IndyCar.com. You can follow all the action there. Slated to begin at 3:30 p.m. Remember last year when everybody was all excited? And I was actually standing down there right next to Mayor Greg Ballard. I was going to talk to him after he waved the green flag. Of course, a lot of other media was as well. Of course, you've got that rolling start, if you will. Basically, looking, if you can imagine this, if you've never been there or not been there on the road course, it's like when you're at a stoplight and the light turns yellow, red, whatever, and then green. And then you go. You go as fast as you can go. Well, the pole setter. Anyway, there was a big wreck, a big mess that was involved in that, because basically huge wreck at the very beginning of the race. So hopefully that'll be able to not happen. But we've got the road course race, and if you go out to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway at all, and you're a fan, and maybe you've been going there for years, you know it's an oval course. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway is an oval course. Well, when you go out there for the road course, it's obviously not an oval, and they're going the other direction. So it appears to you that they're going the wrong direction, when in fact, they're going the right direction. So today, obviously, the final practice, it begins at 11:30 to 12:00, and then the big race, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, begins at 3:30, and that's slated to go 3:30 to 5:45 p.m. Now, and there's a dual track record. Absolutely, another record falls. Power starts the pole. Obviously, the reigning Verizon IndyCar Series champion, Will Power, earned the P1 award. I was out there yesterday. Exciting to see that with a lap of 1 minute in 0.9.4886 seconds. Crazy, crazy race out there. We're standing by here for Philby Wilson. We're hoping to have him on here. If we don't get him on here, we'll get him on sometime here during the month of May. But what do you think about the new qualifying and how IndyCar qualifies? Do they go out in groups or heaps, if you will? They go, you know, and then depending on how you do in those heaps, the fastest obviously goes to the it goes to the final six and so forth from that point. So here's the details of the race, if you will. Obviously, 82 laps, 200 miles. We talked about it being a rolling start. And here's the push-to-pass parameters. 10 activations for 20 seconds each. Pit box dimensions are 47 by 14, so pretty much your normal pit box. Race fuel is 70 U.S. gallons of Sunoco E85 for the race weekend. Tires are 8 sets of Firestone Fire Hawk primary tires and 3 sets of alternate for the race tires. Now, that's an important thing when we talk about fuel management, and we talk about tires on the road course. And the I guess maybe a benefit about it is if you need to pit during a road course, you've got a little bit more time, not much more, but you've got a little bit more time to get what you need to get done in the pits. Now, you think back a few weeks ago when James Hinchcliffe won his race, based on strictly on fuel management, he basically had to be pushed into victory lane because he pretty much ran out of gas. Obviously, Will Power of Team Penske and broke the year-old track qualifying lap record set by Simon Patajon, and we're talking about the Angeles Grand Prix, and we're talking about a track record. There's a new track record. We're going to see that a lot over the next couple of years. Why? One, because cars are getting faster and faster. And two, the race has not been around that long. So you're going, it's like starting a new video game, right? When it's not that hard to set a record on a new score and so forth. So we're still trying to get Philby Wilson on, and we're going to talk a little bit about this. And as those of you at radio know, I'm doing stall up. No, just keep talking, right? Just keep talking. But obviously this is a points race, and you know last year we looked at Simon Patajon, who started fourth in the number 77 Schmidt Peterson Motorsports Honda, held off Ryan Hunter Ray by 0.8906 of a second. So and here's another fun fact: if you're a fan like I am myself, you can walk the road course following the race, pick up, you know, some tire marbles. The top five in the championship standings representing three teams are separated by 24 points. Drivers return to practice on the 2.50 oval on May the 11th, so just next week. Joining us now is Mr. Phil B. Wilson, the man with the plan. I know you're out there, at least I think you're out there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway right now. Appreciate you taking some time to join us on race day. Obviously, it's the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis, the first year that Angie's List has been the title sponsor, and Angie's List is all over the place out there. But more importantly, we've got us a race to run this week, today, and Will Power gets the pole yesterday. Talk with us about that, because what are your thoughts? And Phil, welcome to the show, by the way. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'm on my way out there. I'm not out there yet. Racing until the afternoon, and I'm not in a hurry to sit around on my butt for 6 hours. So
hurry up and wait. Right, absolutely. Well, Phil, we appreciate you joining us. Obviously, it's race day, the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis, the road course race. It, you know, probably one, if not the only, the course that I know of in the nation, anyway, that you can watch both an oval race, an IndyCar oval race, and an IndyCar road course race in the exact same month. And how cool is that? So Will Power and the Penske boys get the P1 spot yesterday. As you were out there at the track, any big surprises there? What happened with Scott Dixon? Obviously, he Will Power pushed him off. And, you know, you had the usual suspects there in the Fast Six. You had, Tony Kanaan and Elio Castroneves. And you, obviously, Will Power, the defending IndyCar champion, takes the pole for the second Grand Prix of Indianapolis. When you were looking at the fast six, was there any surprises? Anything about that maybe stuck out to you?
Well, I mean, you see Chevy first 10 spots, I think it is, and you see the super teams, Ganassi and Penske, all over it, you know, at the top. And that's unless we see anything really, really shocking today, when you got those kind of drivers and those teams up front on a processional road course race where passing's at a premium, I'm going to be hard-pressed to see how anybody can crack through those top six. So I think those drivers are the best. They're probably the best. They're on the best teams, and you're probably gonna see one of those guys win this race.
Well, and I think what we've seen happen here, especially this weekend at the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, is how powerful it is to have a team like Penske behind you. We look at exactly what happened with Tony Kanaan. He was pretty much worried, you know, what's going to happen here in the practice session, which is 25 minutes ago, and he was, what, 21st out of 25 cars, and pretty much was down and out. But he was able, because of his new teammate and because of who he's with now, he was able to go over to the Scott Dixon setup, with Chip Ganassi. But anyway, Kanaan went over to the – and maybe you can help me understand this a little bit more. But Tony Kanaan actually went to the Scott Dixon setup, and I think that helped him, you know, obviously start sixth in today's race.
That's what they do. They share information. You know, I heard a lot of that talk on Sunday when they were practicing for the Oval for the 500 first time with the new aero kits, the aero body kits and you have 2-3-car teams, and they'd send out all three cars with three different setups just to dial in where they need to be. So that's a benefit where you can say, okay, well, we had Scott on this, we had Kanaan on this, we had Charlie Kimball on this, and now we've seen it run for 20 laps. Okay, now let's all set the cars up the same way so that they can run as efficient. So, yeah, it's a benefit to having teammates and being a big team. You can go trial and error and narrow down your possibilities quicker.
Well, absolutely, and it's going to be an exciting race out there today. Obviously, we're talking about the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis, the second GP race, if you will. Let's talk about Graham Rahal. What a great run that he had last week at Barber. Coming to Indianapolis this week, obviously no stranger to Indianapolis. I believe he lives here. I know he's engaged to Courtney Forrest now, and so life is going pretty good for Graham Rahal in his new Steak and Shake car. Kind of interesting to see him in that car. But Graham Rahal, you know, obviously a pedigree in the IndyCar Racing Series. I look for him to kind of be one of those dark horses that nobody's looking at that can make a big impact, especially after what I saw him do last week at Barber on a road course.
Yeah, Graham's had, six runner-up finishes in his career, and there have been times where we predicted he would break through and become the next one of the next stars of the sport, and it hasn't happened for whatever reason. He's had moments. He's had flashes. And last weekend was maybe one of his more impressive runs because, as he told me, he made up, 15, 16 seconds in very little time on a road course and just drove, you know, it was maybe some of his best driving of his career. And so you want to see how that carries over. He felt like he had a good chance to win this race and this track. I don't know if he can do it now where he's at, with all the firepower up front. But you wonder if Graham's turned a little bit of the page and whether he can maybe be a little more consistent. He's only got one win. It was the first time he ever drove in a series race, St. Pete, I believe it was. And so it's been a long time coming for him to win again. I don't know if he'll get it today. I don't know if he'll get it on May 24th, but I know he's hungry.
Well, absolutely. He's very, very hungry for a big win. And how big of a win would it be for him to win here in Indianapolis? And you said you don't know how he can get to that point with all the firepower at the front. It's a road course. But let's face it, accidents do happen at Indianapolis, and you're not going to see a lot of passing per se in today's race. No, I mean, like you would with the oval race with the Indianapolis 500, and you know the push to pass parameters, only 10 activations for 20 second each. So they got to save their pushes to passes to the end, and two, they got to be in a position to where it makes it worth their while to use that push to pass. So how does a guy like Graham Rahal, or you know, a guy like, you know, talk about the title sponsor, and we'll give them some more plugs, and that's Angie's List in the Angie's List car. Obviously, Gabby Chavez, a fantastic driver, proved himself very well in the Indy Light Series. Did well yesterday. I mean, obviously, I think he would have wanted a better performance in qualification, but for a rookie, did very well. When I say rookie in the big guy race, not necessarily a rookie as a driver. How does a guy like Gabby Chavez or Graham Rahal or even Tony Kanaan, he's starting sixth. It's going to be hard for him to get up to the front. How do teams manage their fuel, manage their tires, and get themselves in a position without taking advantage of a caution or a wreck to get ahead of in a race like the Grand Prix of Indianapolis?
No, that's a good question. You know, obviously you have to have your car set up, you know, ideally, which means you're taking advantage of the straightaways. You're getting great speed off of those two straightaways. But the trick to setting up a car for this track is, you know, how much downforce and how much acceleration you can have when you're hitting the turns. You get 14 turns, and you know, if you blitz the straightaways and you do real well, but your car scrubs off speed so bad the turns, those 14 turns, that it's a wash. So you need the right balance to be able to pick up time in those turns. And that's a matter of setting guys up and knowing where to pass. There are certain points of the track that are more advantageous to pass than others. There's enough laps. I think it was 82 laps, I think it is. There's enough running around this track to give you time to overtake. But, you know, if cars are equal, then it comes down to setups and timing and you know, when you make your move and who's going to have the nerve to stick their nose maybe in a spot that they ordinarily wouldn't. And I think all top six drivers will do that. I don't know if Gabby wants to play that game yet with these guys, but, you know, he's a tough young guy. Maybe he will. I know Graham Rahal's not. He's not afraid to stir it up. So, you know, sometimes you stick it in there on one of those turns and maybe it's not there, but you force the issue. And that's when you see excitement, and sometimes you see an incident or two. But, you know, it's just about being patient, about waiting for your hole and your opening. Maybe the shift from a turn is slow. And it's all takes, you know, if the car just doesn't engage as quick as someone else on a turn and the shift and the gear, and that's your 1 or 2 second, 3 second hole. You better take it when you got the chance.
Right, absolutely. And what we saw yesterday in the Indy Lights race, three wide, and we heard Bob Jenkins say on the house speaker, the PA today, that three wide wasn't going to make that turn. Somebody had to. Something had to give. So, you know, when you get three wide going through one of those turns on the road course, it's completely different than having three wide coming down the main stretch of the oval. So let's talk about the oval. You know, you talked about the aero kit and the testing that they did with the new aero kit. What are your thoughts on talking to drivers? I see you out there in the garage. I see you talking to a lot of people. What kind of feedback are you getting about this new aero tech? Pippa Mann was on the show last week, and she was just talking about, hey, you know, all things are equal at this point because there hasn't been any real testing done on the oval race. And obviously she's not going to be racing today, but she's going to be racing in the Indianapolis 500. And so at that point when she was on her show, really didn't have any data to talk about. Now we do. So what are people saying about the oval testing as far as the new aero tech?
To struggle. It's a real struggle. They're trying to figure it out. And I know I talked to Ed Carpenter, Graham Rahal, and some other drivers, and I talked to Larry Foyt yesterday about his cars for the AJ Foyt racing team, and they're all chasing it. They're all chasing it, trying to figure it out. Charlie Kimball told me the same thing, and Charlie's a can't-get Etsy driver. I mean, it's just not as easy as some people think to set up a car quickly. They shook it down on Sunday, and I know there are a lot of people with their heads scratching. So it'll be interesting to see what happens come Monday about how they work on setups and how they figure it out over the course of a week of practice. That's more time. That's what they need. And maybe we'll see the speed chart change a little bit more. But, you know, right now, obviously, when there's a lot of uncertainty and people aren't sure where they want to have this thing set up, that favors the super teams, that favors Penske, it favors Ganassi. So as the week goes on, it'll be interesting to see how Andretti and some of the other teams do, whether they come back in the fold and whether you know, the setups are similar and you know, the speeds they're running are all are close and consistent.
We're talking with Phil B. Wilson, obviously very well known here in the Indianapolis market. You've been a sports writer here for years. This is your first gig as a writing for IndyCar anyway, with the new gig of Scout, and everybody knows that you write about the Colts. So real quickly, diverting off of before we end this conversation today, because I know you're busy trying to get in the trap, but diverting off the IndyCar conversation and going into the conversation that everybody else outside of the race world are talking about, and that's obviously Deflategate and the Wells report that came out No big surprises to Colts fans. I'm sure no big surprise to you. Obviously, Bob Kravitz broke the story. No big surprise to him. But they're still saying, well, why are you picking on the golden child? Why are you picking on our baby, Tom Brady? In NBC Sports, and you had Phil Simmons, and I've heard Dan Patrick, and I love his show, don't get me wrong, but I even him say, why are you picking on Tom Brady so much? Well, Tom Brady, as it appears, has something to do with it. Now it looks like he's going to have to dip in his pocket and going to miss some games. Opening game, and NBC Sports, and everybody's just in turmoil about this. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about the Wells report? Let's get some feedback, because Chuck Pagano isn't giving anything up. He just said, you know, we're moving on with the 2015 season. That was last year. Let the NFL do what the NFL does. We're here to play some football, and that's really all that matters. And basically he's saying that it doesn't matter to him. And then I look at Tom Brady on national television acting like this was comedy hour and laughing it off. And what a slap in the face it is, especially to Colts fans, where he's still – so naive to the fact that he did something wrong or could do something wrong, and now that he's going to be punished, maybe he's starting to realize, hey, wait, maybe I'm not above God or am God like everybody thought that I was.
Well, Tom Brady's going to get punished because he wasn't forthright with the league and he didn't cooperate fully with the investigation, and the Wells report basically suggests that he lied. It basically suggests that he knew what he was doing and that he was the person that, you know, was the push behind having the balls, the PSI lowered. And people are arguing for him or against him, and they're getting all worked up over, you know, how much he should be suspended or fined and all that stuff. I've had a hard time writing something about this since the findings, because I knew, I suspected they did it. I figured they were guilty. But the reality is the balls were swapped out at halftime for regulation weighted balls. And that's when the Patriots ran off and blew the Colts out. So I'm having a hard time getting emotional about a 38-point blowout from the team that got beat. Maybe they should man up and have a better team and give it a better game in the most important game of the year, as opposed to worrying about how much football play. Brady should get suspended. Brady should get fined. You lie to the league, or if you're not truthful or forthright with them in an investigation, you should get punished. I've never understood why New England did it in the first place. Ball comfort aside, okay, fine, but I'm guessing he got away with this for a long time, as the Wells report has suggested. Colts equipment manager once said that it was common knowledge around the league that the Patriots did this to their footballs. So you screw up, or you skirt the rules, and you try and deny that you didn't get a fair shake, and you have your agent run out there and say, oh, he picked on us, or hey, we didn't take anything we said. Well, that's because you weren't honest. Because all the other evidence points to that she did it. And instead of saying, yeah, okay, I liked having a ball that was a little less heavy, you tried to cover it up or you tried to lie. And, you know, I think one of those guys lost their jobs from New England already as a fall guy. And it's just a mess, and it didn't need to be. It really didn't. I mean, I'd rather Tom Brady or the Patriots say, hey, we screwed up. Sorry, punish us, instead of denying it ever happened or acting like, you know, little kids that are trying to hope they don't get caught. It sours me on football right now. I'm sure I'll be different when the season starts, but shame on them. And Roger Goodell, hammer away as much as you want, because I don't think Bill Belichick and Tom Brady respect authority. I don't think they respect rules. They've broken the law before, so hammer them again. And then let's move on. If you're the Colts, let's move on and forget about it, because that team still lost by 38 points in January, and it was god-awful to watch it. I was there, and the Colts still have a large mountain to climb to beat those guys.
Well, absolutely. Phil B. Wilson, we appreciate you taking some time to join us. We're going to continue this conversation here in just a moment. And Mo, I want to make sure you have an opportunity to chime in on what you've heard Phil say, because we're going to continue this conversation. I know Phil's got to go, but Mo, you heard Phil B. Wilson from the Scout talk about the Playgate. Obviously, we were talking some IndyCar with him, and we're talking with Mo from the BS Sports Show on Yahoo Sports. And brought him on to talk specifically about Deflategate. But, Mo, welcome back to The Balance. And did you have any feedback on what Phil had to say?
I appreciate having me again. Phil, a good friend of mine. It's always nice to come on when Phil's anywhere. I think that, you know, obviously that the Patriots have cheated, and I agree with Phil that they should just man up and say, hey, here's what we did. But I wish the NFL would get more creative. Maybe now with the punishment for this. Like, I would love to see Tom Brady standing outside of Lucas Oil Stadium before the game wearing a sandwich board, maybe saying, I'm not allowed to touch my balls anymore. Or, you know, maybe Roger Goodell suspends Tom Brady for certain games. You know, don't suspend him for the cupcake game so they can win. Suspend him against a game against the Colts, or maybe a game against a division rival. You know, let's make it to where it's the tougher games. I mean, let's really punish the Patriots. If you want to punish this and say, hey, cheating's wrong, Let's do it in games that matter, not when you're playing against Jacksonville or somebody like that. Let's do it, you know, punish them against the Colts and against the Bills or the Dolphins, or somebody that matters. But, you know, I'd like to see you get more creative. Let's embarrass Tommy a little bit. Let's be honest. Tommy has got life good. He's got a bunch of Super Bowl rings. He may have cheated, may have not, but he's got Giselle that goes home to every night and a lot of money in the bank. So, you know, it's hard not to be jealous.
Well, absolutely, and I know, Phil, I appreciate you joining us. Phil had to drop off because he's going into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway because it's race weekend here. It's the Indianapolis Grand Prix, the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. But we brought Mo on to talk about the Playgate. Obviously, nobody's the Colts organization is talking about it. You know, here's the whole thing about it, and I think part of what was that Phil said and mentioned was this, that you weren't honest and forthright. And I heard that on Dan Patrick and Mike and Mike and the national circuit, the agent for Tom Brady. Obviously, Tom Brady gave his blessings for him to go on and basically deliver the message, hey, we did cooperate. And one of the things that I just found amusing, and I think a lot of people did, especially as I hear other radio show hosts make fun of this very statement, said, you know, why didn't you turn over your cell phone? Well, we did what we were asked to do. We came and we spent a whole day with them, and they were able to monitor his body language, and from that determined that we weren't going to give up the cell phone. Here's the thing. And going back to being a kid and lying about, just like he's a kid, if you don't have anything to hide, if you're completely innocent, let us look at it, go about your day. He had something to hide. He wasn't completely innocent. And you know, it doesn't matter to me, Mo, that he lost, because it does matter. And that's not the point of the thing. It's the ethics here. It's, you know, when you study business ethics in college and so forth, one of the things they talk about ethics is doing the right thing when nobody else is around. When it's just you, doing the right thing. And he did not do the right thing. And that's what this is about. It's about the fact that Bill Belichick, Kraft, Tom Brady have been able to cheat and just get by with it and get by with it and get by with it because of the New England Patriots. And, you know, maybe this was a sting operation, maybe, because, you know, Grigson and the Colts gave forewarning to the NFL that this may happen. But they didn't check the balls beforehand, so maybe they wanted to catch them red-handed. And now that they have, I think we're going to see a new look on the New England Patriots.
Well, I mean, you know, if I'm the Colts, I'm embarrassed, though, because with the deflated footballs, the game was actually close. When they switched him out at halftime, that's when they got blown away. I mean, at that point, the Patriots could have beaten the Colts using a beach ball. So I think anyway, it's embarrassing for the Colts because, you know, A, you come off maybe looking like a snitch, which, you know, Jarrell Freeman and Ryan Grigson took some heat after the game for that. You know, but the thing with Tom Brady, if you're Ted Wells, and if I'm Tom Brady, I don't know that I want to give my cell phone either, because I'm thinking Ted Wells is just trying to find nude selfies of Giselle on there. So maybe I don't give up my cell phone either if I'm Tom Brady. The thing is, though, that I wonder is if you've gotten caught with these dumb things, the Flightgate to me is stupid. The fact that it took this long to report out is stupid. The fact that we wasted this much time on it is stupid. But what makes me wonder is, what have the Patriots done and cheated that they've gotten away with? That we haven't caught, that nobody's ever been the wiser. Okay, they got caught with Spygate and deflating the football, but what bigger things have they gotten away with that nobody knows about? But
exactly.
At this point, I mean, Tom Brady is the golden boy when it comes to NFL players, and him not being on the field, it drops down ratings. At the end of the day, the reason these guys are concerned, NBC, ESPN, is because you've got a Patriots game that's the primetime game. Let's be honest, they get a lot of primetime TV. Without Tom Brady, it's a lot less interesting game. Yeah, there's a great pre-show to talk about without Tom Brady playing, but you hurt the ratings. And at the end of the day, the NFL is about making money. So that's what it comes down to now. You're going to have people on the other side, if he doesn't get suspended, going, hey, well, there's preferential treatment here because he's a star. Well, that's how it works. That's how it works everywhere. If you're a guy who's got talent and is a star player, you're going to get chance after chance after chance, and you're treated differently. That's just the way life goes. The star at any job, if you got a star sales guy, he's treated different than the lower sales guy. It's how it is. But I think that we've made too much of this from the get-go, and no matter what happened, it continuously has made the Colts look bad because they got their butts kicked after the footballs were changed out. And, you know, if they were involved in some sting operation or whatever, it makes them look petty, and it makes the Colts look bad at the end of the day too, and that's what's the disheartening part of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, and you may have seen the clip as well, but Keith Olbermann said basically Tom Brady needs to be suspended for the entire season. They should suspend Tom Brady for a year, suspending for 24 hours for screwing around with the balls inflation, and then suspending for 364 days for being stupid. And then, you know, just kind of went on and on about that. And I know we've only got you for a few moments here, but when this story first broke last year, right after the thing, We're talking about it. And here's what we played, and I just find it funny now.
Everybody has a preference. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like them tacky. Some guys like them brand new. Some guys like old balls. I mean, they're all different, and it's leather, and it's all, you know, every batch comes, they're different. So you got to feel them, and you try to go out, and you try to use the ones that you like the best.
Our equipment guys do a great job of breaking the balls in. You know, they have the process that they go through. When I pick those footballs out, at that point, you know, to me, they're perfect. I don't want anyone touching the balls after that. I don't want anyone rubbing them, you know, putting any air in them, taking any air out. To me, those balls are perfect, and that's what I expect when I show up on the field.
With respect to the balls, and that there was obviously an issue with the balls.
I don't think anybody knew there was an issue with the balls. I think they said the balls are not ready for play, and then I turn around in the huddle and the ball is ready for play. Some days one ball may feel good, the next day it may not. It depends on maybe how, I don't know, the humidity in the air or whether how old the ball was, or, you know, I think there's a lot of variables with obviously Mother Nature and with the balls. So, you know, whatever feels good that day, those are the ones that I would typically choose.
So those are the same ones that maybe Bill squirts a little water on, where you're not looking at in practice?
Yeah, he does that a lot, but I, you know, it could be, yeah. You know, it definitely could be. When I get the snap, I drop back, I throw the ball. You know, I grip it, and I try to throw the ball. That's the extent of the, you know, me touching the footballs.
All right, and that's Tom Brady talking about his balls, and it goes on for about another minute or so. But, you know, obviously we clipped that together to make a point that all Tom Brady did was talk about his balls. And, you know, I think at this point his balls are going to start hurting a little bit there, Mo.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm enviable of Tom Brady's balls because at the end of the day he rests his balls at home with Giselle Bundchen. No, I mean, here's the thing about it is you know, I honestly could care less about how he likes his balls, your ball, anybody's balls. I don't care. And but maybe the NFL needs to hire a referee that's nothing but basically the jock strap who protects the balls before the game so nobody screws with them.
But I think if you read into the report, the thing that's the most entertaining and intriguing is how much his equipment guys hate him. if you read the text between the two equipment guys, they hate Tom Brady, which is shocking.
Sure.
Especially for a guy who's been there for 30 years. They just absolutely hate Tom Brady and his balls. So it's a very long report to read, but there are some very interesting takeaways from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've learned a lot from Tom Brady's and his balls. But the thing about it is it's got to this point. I guess, you know, we make jokes, we make the ball jokes and all this other stuff, but it got to this point. You know, to protect the integrity of the game, they should have a long time ago paid somebody, you know, $1,000 a week, whatever it is these ball people get paid, and to basically guard the balls. They should have had something in place to prevent this from happening a long time ago. They didn't, and now they will.
Well, you know, you talked about ethics earlier, and I guess it depends on who your teacher was. You know, I went to the Jesse the Body Ventura and Bobby Heenan School of Ethics, where win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So,
yeah, you know, cheating, I guess it depends, ain't trying, on, right.
That's right. That's right. So I guess it depends on who taught your ethics.
Well, I tell you what, no problem with my balls or my ethics or your balls or your ethics, but I do appreciate you coming on and having a conversation with us. I know you said you were very limited on time, so I appreciate you coming on. What's going on with your show this week? Where can people find your work and your masterpieces and, you know, whatever?
Well, I'm back from suspension after garnering a day suspension on Friday. So I'll be back again on Monday talking about balls again. And I'm doing a charity event today in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And people always want to remind me of these things where I have to run. So I would say within a couple of weeks, we're probably going to have a charity event for myself because I'm not a runner. But they keep inviting me to this crap where they want me to run. But we're out here raising money for big brothers and sisters. And then tomorrow, Mother's Day, I'll be a horrible son and probably just send my mom the new T-shirts that you'll be for sale on our website talking about you can't play with Tom Brady's balls anymore.
There you go. There you go. Fantastic. What a great son you are. Myself, I'll be out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We'll be headed out there with the Balance team right after this show and for the Grand Prix, Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Well, we appreciate you joining us.
Just make sure you rub in Sylvie Wilson's face of how many times in a row I've beat him in trivia crack.
I'll do that. In fact, he sits like two rows in front of me at the media center. So I'll make sure that, because I will definitely see him. I will say, Mo says that you ain't nothing in trivia, man. You got nothing.
Thanks for having me, guy. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Mo of the BS Sports Show on Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Indiana. Good guy, fun guy to have on. You know, we have fun talking about Tom Brady and his balls and, you know, yeah, that's all joke. But let's be serious here. We have a professional athlete. It's not the first we see with Ray Lewis, and we've seen it with just so many professional athletes. And so the list is endless. We have kids wearing Tom Brady jerseys. My kid would never wear one. But we have children wearing Tom Brady jerseys. And we have the mainstream media, or the drive-by media, if you will, that is so convinced that nothing can go wrong. What we're talking about, we're hearing other quarterbacks talk about, well, if – it wouldn't have mattered. They could have beat him with a beach ball, right? Yeah, we know that. We know it wouldn't have changed the outcome of the game. But the problem is, why do you have to cheat? If you're going to win, or if you, you know, we joke about it, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Well, the thing about it is, what are we teaching our kids? That's where we're at here. You know, can Tom Brady afford $25,000 that he probably won't pay? Yes, of course. Will the New England Patriots be able to play football with a suspension without Tom Brady? Yes, of course. Will NBC Sports be able to survive? Man, maybe not. Their ratings will fall through the roof, right? But the point is, and here's my point, especially Tom Brady, you know, it's not like other players, Ray Lewis and things like, you know, probably here soon we're going to see something from Jameson Winston. I'm just saying, you know, the thing about it is maybe we expect certain players to be a certain way, but we don't expect players like Tom Brady to be involved in this scandal. Why? Because he's a role model. Why is he a golden boy? Is it because he plays with the New England Patriots? Is it because Bill Belichick has made him his golden boy? Is it because he's been part of a dynasty of Super Bowl wins? Or is it because he's got that good boy American look that, you know, successful? This, if you want to emulate somebody, and we teach our kids, if you want to emulate somebody successful, watch successful people and do what they do. So when we teach our kids to watch successful people and to do what they do, what we're teaching our kids through Tom Brady is if you cheat to be successful, it's okay. It's not okay, exclamation point. It is not okay. And the NFL really needs to come down hard on Tom Brady. You know, I know Keith Olbermann was tongue-in-cheek when he said should suspend Tom Brady for the entire year, but maybe they should. Maybe the New England Patriots should really pay the price. Is that going to happen? Hell no. He'll get a slap on the wrist, and they'll continue to move forward. A 2 or 3 game suspension, and they'll continue to move forward. Although, a lot of people think it's going to be more like 8 games. That could have a significant impact on the New England Patriots. So, my point is, if we are going to establish certain people in our society to be role models, that role model should be a role model. Does Tom Brady really need to cheat? Does Tom Brady really need to deflate balls to win games? No, he doesn't. He's a great quarterback. He's got a great coach. And I'm not a Bill Belichick fan, but we can't deny the numbers. We cannot deny the results that Bill Belichick's been able to do with the New England Patriots. Yes, he got caught with Spygate, and that's true. And, you know, Mo made a very good point. What else have they not been caught at? What bigger things? Maybe Bill Belichick isn't that great of a coach. Maybe Tom Brady isn't that good of a quarterback. Maybe. It's ridiculous that it even had to get to this. And I do agree with what Philby Wilson said, and that is, you know, let's just play some football. This off-the-field antics over the last couple years have been crazy, have been nuts. And I'm glad let's hurry up and make the announcement. All we're hearing is, well, rumor has it, Brady will be suspended, announcement coming forth. Well, when's the damn announcement? We want to know. And do we even know who his backup quarterback is? I mean, the average fan, obviously I know who the backup quarterback is, Jimmy Garoppolo. Is that how you say his name? So we don't even know how to say his name. Is he up for the challenge? That's all everybody's going to be talking about. Oh, no. No Tom Brady. Jimmy, what can he do? Oh, it's all. If we only had Tom Brady back. If only. Well, if only the New England Patriots and Tom Brady hadn't cheated. If only. I don't want to hear the cries. I don't want to hear the whining. I don't want to hear the cries from the NBC Sports. I don't want to hear the cry from fans. I don't want to hear the cries from Colts fans either, for that matter. They got exactly what they deserve. Unbelievable. So you guys get me on my soapbox on a Saturday morning on race day. It's just to the point of pure ridiculousness. Let's play football. They earn all of this money. We spend good money on tickets, especially season ticket holders across the board. thousands of dollars that we chuck into the NFL. Maybe we control. Maybe we actually control what happens. Am I saying boycott NFL? No, of course not. What I am saying is if we don't buy tickets and we hit them in the pocketbook as fans, maybe that'll send a bigger, stronger message than finding Tom Brady $25,000 and suspending for 8 games. I don't know what it's going to be, but, you know, that would be, according to the rules, if you mess with the balls, you're going to get about 25 Gs, 25 GER. Chump change to people in the NFL. So that's no big deal. In fact, even if they get fined that, how many times do they actually pay it? And it goes to charity. So they're just making a donation to charity. Is it really hurting them? What does hurt them, though, whether or not it affects the wins and losses, when you take a professional athlete out of the game, whether it be basketball, baseball, football, hockey, what have you, you take them out of the game, now you've got their attention. You know, when I played sports, obviously I wasn't any good at it because I'm doing this, but when I played sports in high school, if your grades weren't right or if you messed up in practice, you messed up in a game, you weren't playing. That sent a stronger message to me than any, you know, running, you know, cherry picks, doing the extra practices. It didn't bother me. But take me out of the game, that bothers me. So as a professional athlete, maybe, let's hope that Tom Brady has his attention. We've got his attention now. Maybe, let's hope we've got his attention now. Because he's going to be out of the game for a while. 5 games, 4 games, 3 games, 6 games, 8 games. We don't know. But it's coming. And I think that the NFL was waiting to hear the public outcry, as if we had to give a public outcry for a suspension of Tom Brady before they actually suspended Tom Brady. Well, what do the fans want? Well, the fans want their players to be the role models for their children. That's what they want. They may want them to win games, but they want them to play fair. They want them to play by ethics. And so, you know, when are we going to learn? When are we going to learn? Well, guys, my name is Saul Marquis, El Presidente. What a great show. We got off to a rough start, but that happens from time to time, right? But good show. Thank you to Steve Wilson talking some NASCAR with us, to Phil B. Wilson talking some IndyCar. It's the Angie's List Grand Prix race this afternoon out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. My name's Tom Marquis. Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. I'll see you next Saturday right here on the Balance Radio Network and Yahoo Sports Radio Indiana. Indiana Sports Radio on an encore episode as well. I'm out of here. Have yourself a good week. Deuces.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.